focusing upon your breath and noticing how your breath comes into your lungs, expanding your chest, and then the reverse of flow as it moves outwardly. And in the center of your chest area, there is what is known as the heart chakra. It is the place where consciousness of feeling and of love have the potential to manifest inside you. With your mind's eye, see there and feel in your heart center that there is a warmth and a love, a softness of being, a radiance of light, a warm glowing light. Feel that that light is filling up your entire heart center area, filling it to overflowing, and let it move out through your entire body and through your entire being, that you are surrounded and encased in this wonderful warmth of love, and that it is your natural state. That there is an infinite supply. There is the saying that love is God and God is love. And that what at first may be something that you do in your mind can trigger the reality, and that you might experience that reality. And so you feel that love expanding beyond yourself, beyond your body, and to see it filling up this entire room and all the people that are within it. And where before you may have felt yourself to be an individual as separate from others, you now feel yourself commingling in spirit. And that there is no separation, there are no boundaries. And yet you retain a sense of I, but it's expanded, it's enlarged. And then you feel that light, that love, expand out until it encompasses the entire town and all the surrounding areas. And once again, you feel merged in a spiritual way with all that is here. You can see the individualities and people in their small human consciousness walking upon the earth. But you also know that you are more than that. You are connected with and yet separate from everything that you sense and feel. And you let your consciousness expand out some more until you feel it surrounding this entire earth. You see the earth as a bubble in a sea of space. And you can see and feel that light permeating throughout the earth and all the beings, all the consciousness, all the powers that are within it. You see there conflicting thoughts, differentiation between one and another, how somebody can with a stick draw a line in the ground and say this side is mine and that is yours, and you smile. Because you feel yourself to be one with everything that is, and therefore there are no distinctions. In that wholeness of your heart, you let go of everything that separated you from this whole. You let go of the differences. You let go of any old angers or hates or fears. And you float in space as a point of consciousness that is connected with everything of this earth. You allow yourself to expand out into the infinite reaches of this universe and even beyond, until you see this entire universe floating like a tiny bubble in a sea of consciousness. And you know you are connected with that tiny bubble, and yet you are more than that. You feel the freedom, the lightness of being, the joy. There are no restrictions for you now. And yet within you is a great sense of peace and stillness. And that permeates through everything that you see. In Christian terminology, this is Christ consciousness. In the East, it would be called Katastya Chaitanya. It is the universal perspective of the soul. And then as you refocus your mind back onto your small individuality of your small body, and you see how constricted that view is in comparison with your universal self, and so you allow yourself to expand once again into the universal I, and you feel your freedom, you feel peace. Beyond the body, beyond form, beyond name. The great I am. And you are that. You are that. Great Universal Vision. I'm going to read from Yogananda's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is the New Testament, you might say, of India. And it is where the Christ of India, Krishna, talked to Arjuna, who is the same as Peter. And he's describing to him all that is required in order to gain this great realization, this universal vision. This comes from chapter 18, verse 2. The Blessed Lord said, "Sages called sannyasa, the renunciation of all actions done with desire. The wise declare that tyaga is the renunciation of the fruits of activities." So sages called sannyas or sannyasa, and when you're in India, you see people going around in orange robes as renunciants. And so the inner meaning of that, the renunciation of all actions done with desire. And the wise declare that tyaga is the renunciation of the fruits of activities. So Yogananda's commentary is both sannyasa and tyaga in common parlance, indicates renunciation, leaving or giving up worldly objects and pursuits, especially as embraced by those who take holy vows, as in the ancient Shankar order of Swamis. But the Gita makes a deeper case for true renunciation as requiring an inner non-attachment above and beyond any mere physical act of material abandonment. In that explication, a subtle distinction is made between the sannyasa and tyaga to define two aspects of renunciation. Sannyasa renunciation signifies the abandonment of the desires and selfish motives that are the usual instigators of actions. Tyaga renunciation means the relinquishment or non-identification with the inevitable fruits or results that accrue from all actions. So this is central to the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, of Krishna's teachings. He says where we get bound up in this world, where we get into trouble with it, is when we get attached to the activities that we're involved with in the world. For instance, if you were to start out with a project and you have a goal in mind, you want to achieve something, you want to create something. So you have this creative impulse come into your mind, and now you enter into the activity. You actually begin to create something. And as you go along, you try different things, and you're working toward this end, and sometimes things go with you, and sometimes they go against you. And when they go against you, because you have an attachment that it should look like a certain thing, you can get frustrated, you can feel angry, you can feel like giving up. You have all kinds of reactions to how things are going toward this project. To work without attachment doesn't mean that you don't care, that you don't have some firm idea of what you want to achieve, but you hold it lightly in your mind. You know what you're headed for, and when you try to take an activity towards that and you run into a blockage, you don't get into an emotionally reactive state to that. You retain an inner calm. And you may ask yourself, well, what is this? What is this? That I'm not able to achieve what I'm headed for, that it's not turning out the way that I thought it would. And so you take, with your calm mind, you take a look at that. And you try to learn from your experience, and you try something else. You keep heading on toward the end goal. But you're not attached to it in a way that gets you all bound up in knots about it. We've all been in different activities where we start to feel anxious about something. How is this going to work out? What will other people think? What will I think? Will I be satisfied with this? Will it work in the end? And the more attached we are to these kinds of things, the more upset, the more uptight we get about it. And so this is a great impediment, actually, to the creative flow. When you watch children, you see that they don't have that same kind of an attachment. They'll be working on something, and they'll be working at it and working at it, and if it all falls apart, maybe they have a little frustration, but then they start on it again. As we get older, the attachment grows stronger, and that perfectionistic self inside of us grows stronger along with it. And so we get more and more in our own way. We start projecting into the future instead of staying in the present. We start thinking in cataclysmic ideas. Things never go my way. Nothing ever turns out for me, maybe our thought pattern. And so we feel discouraged. I think that's the greatest disease that mankind has to deal with, is discouragement. When you find somebody who's extremely discouraged, you find somebody who's not willing to try anything, not willing to do anything new. They've lost faith in themselves. They've lost faith that anything good can happen from what they're doing. That's a terrifically difficult place to come to. And so, to step back from that, to notice when these thoughts come, if they come into your mind, and let them pass right on through, they're not useful to you. They're not useful to you. So you step back from it all. You tune in to that higher intelligence that you assume must be working behind the scenes. And at first it's an article of faith. You don't know it. Perhaps you've had a little glimpse of it. But you don't know it. But the more you open yourself to it, the more you see it operating in you. There are people who get into financial difficulties. And when they do, they spend more than what they have. And suddenly they feel that they're being snowed under by everything that they owe and all the responsibilities they've taken on. And they just want to ignore it. They want to turn away from it. And some people, as in crazy as it can seem, actually spend more when they get more in debt as a way of trying to relieve the stress that they're feeling, which of course only gets them into bigger problems. And so this reactivity that we have to the world is a great problem, where it takes us out of harmony and out of the flow that should be naturally moving through us. And when you do that, you no longer have any peace, you no longer have any happiness, and no joy. Now, in the story of Adam and Eve, this was told as Adam and Eve, through their own decision-making process, took themselves out of the garden, where they walked and talked with God, where they were in harmony with that divine consciousness. And one of the sentences, one of the karmic consequences of what they did, was that they had to earn their living by the sweat of their brow. And they no longer lived in that joy of service. They no longer lived in that harmony of oneness. Now they felt they were in competition, and that is Cain and Abel. And jealousy comes in, and competition comes in, and a feeling that one isn't good enough. And so he actually tries to destroy that inner goodness, that inner harmony, that inner positivity. And now we've entered fully into ego consciousness and into the field of separation through the death of that positive virtue that was most acceptable to God, or in tune and in harmony with divine consciousness. You see, this is all a symbolic story of what happens inside of us. It all has psychological and spiritual truths. And it is our story. It's not just a story that happened thousands of years ago. It's the story of every human being as they have descended and evolved into the very narrow, limited human consciousness. Now, there's nothing that made this happen. It was choices that we made along the way. And in the same way that we chose to move into this human state of consciousness and to completely be oblivious and forget our divine nature, even as we chose to move into that, we can choose to begin to extricate ourselves back out of it and to enter into the divine consciousness, which we have never really left, only in our mind. It has made us think so. If you take somebody who's very afraid of heights, for instance, and you put them next to a cliff, they're perfectly safe where they're standing, but they look over the side and they get a sense of giddiness. They get a sense that they're going to fall over. Their heart begins to race. They begin to sweat. They have palpitations. It's a very extreme state of consciousness. Now, nothing has happened to them, except that they perceive that there's a danger, and as a result, their body is responding in this way, and they can totally freeze up. And this is not helpful or useful to them, and yet this is what happens. We all have come into this earth consciousness with our own past. In yoga language, these are called samskaras. Samskaras. They are the tendencies that we bring with us from the past. Now, every child that is born into this world comes with their own samskaras. So it's very important for the environment that the parents provide for this new baby, even when they come into the womb. You can talk to that child. They feel the vibration. They hear the words. In India, for thousands of years, they would sing to the baby. They would tell the baby stories about sacred events, the holy stories of mankind. They would sing songs of thanksgiving and praise to God. And in this way, the baby absorbs those kinds of vibrations. It hears the stories, and it actually takes all of this in. There's much more consciousness that is there than what we might ordinarily think. Through my own meditation experiences, I remembered being in my mother's womb. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. I really liked it there. In fact, on some border of my own consciousness, I knew I was coming into this lifetime and it wouldn't always be easy. And I didn't want to come. I just wanted to stay right where I was. However, nature had a different plan. And of course, as the baby grows within the womb, eventually it has to leave that place and it has to enter into a larger, brighter world filled with some dangers and difficulties, that is for sure, but also filled with opportunities for growth. And so we all come with those kinds of tendencies that are already in place, and those begin to mix with the environment of the mother and the father and what they have brought to us, the environment that we are brought into. And they all mix together to form our experience in this human life. Now, there are many people, like I did, who felt like I must have been born into the wrong family. And yet it was the perfectly perfect family for me, because everything that I experienced was something that was necessary for me to go through. And while I didn't always like it, and I didn't always appreciate it, and I didn't always think that it should be, nevertheless, it was true. And there have been so many circumstances in my life that once I saw the explanation through my own internal experience of why things happened in the way that they did, then I understood the totality of it. Krishna says in this Bhagavad Gita, and speaking to Arjuna, I know all of my incarnations. I understand why things happen in the way that they do. You do not, and that's why you think that there are errors. You think that there are mistakes. You think that things don't turn out in the way that they should. But I am here to tell you that everything is unfolding exactly as it should. Now, Papa Ram Dass wrote this in a Vision magazine. And Swami Satchidananda, who is destined to come and take sannyas, these renunciation vows from Papa Ram Dass, when he saw that Papa had wrote these words, the world is exactly as it should be, he thought to himself, now all of us could think what we might think to ourselves hearing this, but Swami Satchidananda thought, I must meet this man. It must take an extraordinary individual to be able to say this. Because he looked out through his own two eyes, through his ears, through his senses, and he knew what he saw. He had been in the army. He had seen war. He had gone through bouts of depression. And he knew how ugly this world could get. And for somebody to say it's exactly as it ought to be seemed really remarkable. And yet, when we refine the mind and the consciousness to see the universal vision, we see that this is exactly true, beyond what we know through the senses and as a human ego. You might compare it to what a parent knows in comparison to a child. A parent will know that a child may have to go through certain difficulties. It will have to be toilet trained. It will have to learn some social graces. It will have to go through some schooling. It will have to go through what they call the school of hard knocks at times. And as much as the parent would like to save the child from any pain and any stubbed toes along the way, that child has to go through certain experiences in order to learn and to grow. And the parent understands this because the parent knows that as the child passes through these experiences, the child will grow. It will learn. It will develop into a full adult being. And as such, it will begin to understand more of what this life is really about. How much greater that is for somebody who has come into a state of realization. And they see the human struggle. They know it intimately themselves because they have been through it. But they know something that those who are struggling don't know. They know what will be the ultimate conclusion to that human soul's evolution. Now, whether it happens in a single lifetime or over many lifetimes, they know that that individual eventually come to realize who and what they are in God. And as a result of that, they will be an enlightened being. And as such, everything that they pass through is perfect for them. Perfect for them. When you can accept that for yourself, that what you're passing through is exactly right for you, your circumstances, the people that are in your life are exactly right for you, then you can surrender, you can let go of that idea that things are wrong. I remember for so long I had the attitude, things should be easier. They should come easier to me. I shouldn't have to struggle so much. Now, it wasn't necessarily I was always thinking this in a conscious way. But in my unconscious mind, I felt that way, and I felt a certain resentment towards this world and towards my circumstances. I wanted things to be easier, thinking that they were somehow wrong in the way that they were. When I came to realize that I was holding this resentment and this idea, that was my attachment, you see. The world should be different than what it is. I should be different than what I am. The fact is, this is who I am. This is how my world is constructed. And what I'm here for is to do this work. And I let go of the attitude. I let go of the idea that my life should be different and that I should somehow be different. I oftentimes tell people, you cannot begin at the end. You have to begin right where you are. Now, that may seem like a self-evident statement, but it's amazing how much we hold on to the idea that we should be different, we should be better. Now, this is a good thing in a way, because it's our aspiration for perfection. It's our aspiration for growth, and this is a positive. But when we're attached to it in a way that doesn't allow us to be who we are today, it turns into a negative because we are ashamed, we are afraid, we get angry, we want to hide. And those things are not helpful. So we accept who we are right now, right now. We let go of the idea that we should be able to begin at the end, that we should be able to begin with perfection. In the first place, it's only your human sense of perfection. And your human sense can only see life through a limited lens. And however you conceive a spiritual life to be is in error when it comes from your human self. And yet we have to start with something. We have to use our mind because that's all we have. Until our experience begins to teach us on a deeper level than the mind could ever know. The mind is limited. God is not. In your human sense, you are limited. In your divine sense, you are not. But you have to be able to realize the divine sense. You just can't read about the theory and accept it and say, all right, I'm there, I'm realized. It doesn't work that way. It has to be an actual experience, and not just one time or occasionally. But you have to keep going until you come into that state where you are in a constant state of realization, a constant state of perfection within your spirit. Jesus said, "Be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect." But when we look at our human self, we say, "How in the world could I ever be perfect? I know myself, and I know that I'm anything but perfect. I'm filled with human limitations. I'm filled with imperfections." And yet here comes a commandment, be perfect. The means for perfection comes through accessing and connecting with and becoming one with your divine self. Now, to much of the world, this would seem like a fairy tale. This would seem inconceivable. But to your divine self and to something deep inside of you, you know that it's true. You know that it's possible. You sense that within yourself. In a human sense, you will never attain to that perfection. It is said that no man has ever seen God. But what that refers to is in your human limitations, human ego self, you will never know God from there. But that is not the whole of you. It is not the whole of you. And even though that may be all that you have known in this lifetime, it is not all of who you are. Now, in the beginning, we're striving. We're striving and striving. Larhi Mahasya used to say, "Striving, striving, behold, one day the divine goal." And this is what we aim for. This is what we strive for. And as we work on it and work on it and work on it and never give up, never give up, never give up, eventually something begins to change inside of us. We feel a movement. We feel something larger than ourselves begin to be an active component within our lives. It is a state of purity. It is a state of peace. It is a state of pure joy. And sometimes we get glimpses of it, and then we just go to as much to sleep as we ever were. And then we get another glimpse of it. And then it seems so far away from us. And it is through these experiences of touching in with it and then moving away from it that our divine ardor begins to grow within us. We desire to know that perfection. I'm unhappy now with the limitations of the human self. And I really want to know this divine self. It is so far beyond anything that I can experience in the human self that I want to have that experience continuously. There's one devotee who, when she was giving childbirth, went into a state of death for a while on the table. And during that time, she was lifted up into this near-death experience. Now, this happened many years. Her child is over 35 years old now. I think over 40 years now. So it's been a long time. But she was lifted up into this state, and she said, "I never wanted to come back. I wanted to stay right where I was." And she was in this heavenly state of consciousness. She was in this light. The sense of profound sense of well-being was so much with her that she didn't want to come back. And then she thought of her children. She had 6 children. And she thought, "My children need me." And it was that thought that made her realize that she was going to come back, even though it broke her heart to think about it, because she so much wanted to stay right where she was. And the next thing she knew, she was back into body consciousness again. Now, she didn't go anywhere in a physical sense. What she experienced was her divine self. Her divine self. I once had a recalled memory of a time when I left the body in a previous lifetime. And I was lifted up into that same realm. And there I reviewed my life as it flashed before my mental screen. And I had this wonderful, wonderful divine being sitting with me that was instructing me about my life in an intuitive way. I just knew the thoughts of this divine being. And I marveled at the beauty, at the grace, at the love, at the wisdom that this divine being had who was sitting next to me. Now, I didn't realize it at the time, but it was my own inner Christ self that was manifesting because I couldn't completely accept it as myself. I had gone through a very violent and difficult lifetime, and I certainly couldn't accept it as myself. But I really noticed and was struck by the qualities of this divine being sitting next to me. And I thought to myself, I want to be like him. I want to have those qualities. I want to be like that. And it was a turning point in the evolution of my consciousness. A adamantine desire was formed inside my soul. Now, it just didn't make everything go smoothly after that. There was a lot of ups and downs. But something had changed in me. Something had awakened in me that would not and refused to go back to sleep again. Now, I know that there are many of us who go through a lifetime and we wake up, so to speak, that is to say that we die. And when we die, we come up and we wake up to where our true soul's intention was during the lifetime. And we think back on our lives, and we think back with regret. We think, why did I waste another lifetime? I didn't really fully utilize it. I didn't fully live it. I didn't realize all that I wanted to realize in this lifetime. And we do that lifetime after lifetime, but as we do, it awakens in us that extreme desire. I want to wake up. I don't want to sleep anymore. I want to realize the soul that I know myself to be. And when we have that firm in our own beings, then we will have turned a corner. And we will have, instead of going out from our divine consciousness, we will now be going back, so to speak, toward that realization of who and what we have always really been. So when we feel that awakening inside of us, we feel that divine grace begin to guide us. We feel it as a living presence inside of us. Now we surrender. We surrender to that. Now, if you talk to somebody about surrender, before they've had that awakening of that inner divine self, they won't know really what you're talking about. They'll think, oh, well, surrender. What is it to surrender? Well, who do I surrender to and to what? But when you feel that inner movement inside of you, and it may be just occasionally at first, but as you deepen, it becomes something that is more consistent, more profound. It grows inside of you. And now you feel this profound presence awakening inside of you and the ego consciousness inside of you. That part of you that's always lived in reactivity and attachment to this world, now you let go of it. You are now in a state of renunciation as you let go of these actions. You feel that God is the operator of the instrument and you are the instrument. You now feel that a divine consciousness is operating through you. Your intuitive sense has opened up in a way that it never has before. And you feel that God is writing through you as using a very, very fine pen on beautiful paper, and He is writing your life in the book of life. And your life is no longer your own, and gladly so. You realize that before you were like a small child trying to drive a car. You didn't know how to drive, you didn't know where you were going. And you'd run into ditches and into swamps and get yourself in terrific difficulties. And now the adult, the Christ self within you, is now driving. And you feel that you are being guided, being led in all that you do and say. Now this wonderful divine force is awakened inside of you. It's an act of partnership with you in a state of surrender, but as a witness to what goes on through you and around you. And you stand in awe. You stand in love. You stand in the wisdom that is given to you. And you are in a state of complete surrender. This becomes the gateway towards your divine self, towards your divine life, through this surrender. And now you are a perfect state of peace and equilibrium. You have now fulfilled the evolutionary goal which you had set for yourself as a soul so very long ago. This is your life. It is your destiny. And whether you choose to accept it now or defer it to another time, you only delay that time when you will know this complete and total sense of fulfillment and joy and peace. So why would you do that to yourself? Why would you not embrace it? Start embracing it today. And when you do so, you will begin that long journey back. And perhaps not a long journey. We don't have to manufacture something that's not there. It can be something that is close as your next breath. It is the thought behind your present thought. It is the feeling that stirs within your heart. It is the life force that moves through you, that allows you to move and to breathe and to think. You see, the divine life is so close to you, that's why people oftentimes miss it. They've grown over familiar with it. And they don't recognize how powerful, how wonderful, how beautiful it all is, you see. That's the great tragedy. As Mother Hamilton used to say, before original sin, there was original innocence. And we have that original innocence inside of us. And to allow it to awaken, so that you might know that divine self within you, and that you might learn that surrender is the gateway to divinity.